The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's March the 28th, 2024, and this is episode number 30. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about electric pickup truck towing torture testing, Genesis announcing Magma Performance sub-brand with its GV60, Fisker continuing to circle the drain, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the convivial Mr. Tom Logney, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the most memorable Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us, or will join us in a moment, from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out-of-Spec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels, along with Dave Connor, who captains the Out-of-Spec Dave YouTube channel. Hey there, everybody.
Hello, hello.
What's up, guys? All right. It's good to see you all. So I guess let's kick this off with the EV News Daily Weekly Reporting Roundup.
Okay, well, let's kick off with some news this week. And we saw some photographs online of the first Tesla V4 superchargers, third-party ones that we think going in the ground. These were actually in the UK, something called Uttoxeter, and they are the EV Point branded ones. Now, I keep calling them V4 superchargers, but they're nothing to do with Tesla. They make the hardware, but I need to get my head around just calling them chargers, because anyone can use these. They're not just for Teslas, but otherwise, yeah, they are Tesla V4s, aren't they? Tesla's Cybertruck is being prepped for wireless charging. The first couple of teardowns are happening online right now, and some sleuths on the internet found a couple of the orange high voltage connectors vacant, and then somebody did the unthinkable and actually read the manual, and it says, yep, they're ready to go for an inductive charging. So we'll wait and see if Tesla have some sort of pad for the bottom of your garage floor up their sleeves. Tesla launching complimentary full self-driving for anyone who's an existing owner for a month. And Tesla mandating driver demos on all new handovers. Now, if anyone's ever bought a new Tesla, you know, it's very hands-off. In fact, one of my listeners in Sweden said that he did the whole thing because all the paperwork was done on the app. Never saw a human being. I'm used to that with taking a car back for service and then picking up a loaner and doing it all on the app and never seeing a human. But this is a complete 360 on that. A very hands-on experience that Elon Musk mandating this week, where staff members will take you out. He wasn't clear in your car or one of their cars, but for a drive to show you how full self-driving works. That's the complete opposite of the Tesla experience. Reminds me of 10 years ago when the Model S launched here in the UK in 2014. In fact, June 2014, the Model S launched in right-hand drive, of course, pre-facelift. So we're just off 10 years of that. And you'd go along to a showroom and there'd be lots of people clapping and a silk cloth and they'd whip it off and you'd see a brand new Tesla. It's a different world these days there. You're lucky if they wash it. Tesla is starting advertising on the likes of Facebook and Instagram. No love lost between him and Mark Zuckerberg, but behaving more like a traditional car company and some above-the-line spending to boost those end-of-quarter numbers. Here in Europe, Stellantis will build Leap Motor cars. That's a Chinese company, but they've got exclusive rights to build and sell those in Western markets. And maybe those cars will even arrive partially built with cheaper Chinese labor, finished in Europe, avoids any of the incoming tariffs, and we'll interestingly see if that model is copied by other big car makers. Chevy is refunding any Blazer buyers who were the early ones before the stop sale and the software fix. They since reduced the price to, again, juice the sales a bit and get attention. But Chevy doing the right thing by those early owners and giving them the price difference back. Xiaomi, the famous name in technology, TVs, mobile phones. I think my toothbrush is a Xiaomi toothbrush. They're now making EVs, doing what Apple couldn't. And actually, the SU7, as one of my Chinese listeners informed me, everyone is calling it the SU7, but it's the SU7. I'm reliably informed. We'll see if my source was wrong. That is a car about the size of a Model S, but for the price of a Model 3. In fact, $4,000 equivalent, cheaper than a Model 3 in China. Get the one that's the same as the entry-level Model 3, and you get better specs on almost every metric. And the Chinese love their homegrown cars. It's probably going to cause a few sleepless nights for Western car makers. Fisker and Nissan's deal fell through this week. Fisker also said that they would not be able to meet some of their obligations because of those financial issues. They reduced the price of the Ocean by $24,000. Would you take a risk on buying that vehicle? Some say they're just clearing out inventory before the inevitable. If they pull through, though, and pull this off, it will be the greatest escape since Steve McQueen. Actually, no, he was captured in the end. That was a bad example. Northvolt broke ground in Germany. AESC expanded their South Carolina operations, where they'll make cylindrical cells for the Neue Klasse vehicles made in Mexico. BYD made their 7 millionth EV this week. That does include plug-in hybrids as well. And finally, Ford unveiled the Explorer. For my US viewers and listeners, it's a different Explorer than what you think. This is, though, based on Volkswagen's MEB platform. So many of the specs are the same, like the little battery bump that the ID3 GTX got recently with the 79 kilowatt hour battery. It gets that, but otherwise it's very much a Ford car, but based on VW stuff. There are some, if you really look for it, there are some similarities, but Ford very much saying, we've redesigned it, this is our own thing. But that's, of course, for the European market. It could end up, I don't know, elsewhere, but for now, that vehicle, I think styling looks great and has a very decent engineering underneath it. And that is all for this week. Oh, by the way, you can catch EV News Daily on your audio platforms every single day. If you watch this and you are not yet subscribed to the podcast, what are you waiting for? It's free, and you can search YouTube for EV News Daily as well and catch the video version.
Yes. All right. I just want to say, Martin, I've been really enjoying the EV News Daily feed this week. The
show. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Oh, you're the one, are you? Okay, I'm sorry. I had a viewer. It must have been you.
So if you love to hear what's happening in the industry in the dulcet tones of Mr. Lee here, then go to EV News Daily YouTube channel and tap that bell icon for notifications. So you get a reminder every day. You get this, you know, Mr. Martin Lee popping up on your screen. All right. So let's get into it, I guess. Let's see. Kyle should be joining us any moment now.
he just messaged. He's on his way.
Right, so I'm going to do this intro like he's here, but because I have faith, right? Okay, so let's get into it. Kyle, for the past few weeks, maybe, I'm not sure, hopefully you can hear me. I'm sure you can, right?
Just talk really slowly. Okay.
For the past few weeks, you've been all about electric pickup trucks. I mean, we knew you were all about them before. You've owned a Rivian R1T for some time now, but a couple weeks ago, you picked up your Tesla Cybertruck and immediately raced it against three other pickup trucks from Jacksonville to San Diego, electric ones. But you haven't stopped. You got the Tesla Cybertruck home, let Colton put together a video about how to clean it for the Out of Spec Detailing channel. Then you did a range test along with the Rivian R1T, Ford F-150 Lightning, and Chevrolet Silverado EV, which we talked about last week. Now, this week, you've created a new extreme towing challenge route called the Rustic Ring and ran the Cybertruck through it while towing a Rivian on a trailer. Apparently, that wasn't enough, though, so you got the four main electric pickup trucks available on the market today, not including the Hummer EV. and hooked them up to four identical trailers, stuck a Tesla Model 3 on each trailer, and raced them 500 miles over the Rocky Mountains and back. Geez Louise, Kyle. So I want to go in some details about all of this. But first, I should also mention that the part one of the ocean-to-ocean EV truck race that I was referring to at the beginning of this little spiel went live last Friday. It's like a really long, 2 hours and some. So if you haven't seen that, I don't know, if you're interested in, you know, racing EVs cross country and charging strategies and everything that can go right or wrong.
I think people are, because it's had well over 100,000 views, maybe a couple of 100,000 views. That first part has done massively well. So people are very, and I also saw it widely reported as well, sort of it's spread out to other parts of the media. So I think it captured attention, didn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. We had it on Inside EVs as the main banner article, and it stayed in the number one spot on the site for like 3 days, I think. So it was there's a lot of interest in Kyle's range tests with these.
Wow.
There he is.
And so part two will come out, we think, tomorrow, right, Kyle, of the ocean EV race?
Yep, it'll come out tomorrow, and then part three will be the following Saturday.
Right.
Cool.
So I don't know if you, did you catch all that intro?
tell us about the rustic ring.
Yes,
basically.
Oh, have you guys already talked about it? We don't need to talk about it twice.
No, we just didn't.
No, we haven't talked about it. It's just intro. Setting you up to talk about it. Basically,
go ahead. So
basically, you set up a big route somewhere in Colorado, and for torture testing trucks, I think, while towing, and then you've put your Cybertruck through it. So we want to just talk about that a little bit. So first, what is the idea behind this big route? How long is it, and what do you think you can find out about the trucks when you run them through it?
Yeah, so it's 86.7 mile loop, runs through the town of Rustic, Colorado, which is why we call it the Rustic Ring, because we start and end at the office. It has thousands of feet of elevation change, so it's constantly hardcore uphill, hardcore downhill, hardcore corners, dirt as well, which is really cool. We've only published the Cybertruck video so far, but I've been running a lot of these this week. I've done Silverado EV, Hummer EV, Model X, and more to come. We've learned a lot about this ring and the towing tests and what we're basically able to learn from the vehicles. If anything, it's a great way to get the vehicles in a pretty extreme state to give a full review of towing, because we start and end in the city by the office. We go straight up a mountain pass for 12 or 13 miles of just straight increasing hardcore elevation. And then that turns into straight downhill for a few miles. So that rapidly heats up the driveline systems, rapidly heats up inverters, and we're really able to push the thermal capacities to the maximum and the battery cells. Typically, battery temperature isn't going to be an issue, but the cell chemistry and the cell characterization of allowing that much regen after that much acceleration, actually, it was a limiting factor we found for the Cybertruck. And ultimately, it's a pretty hardcore test. We have two categories of trailers we've decided on, a 5,000-pound category and a 10,000-pound category. Maybe we'll do more as capabilities increase in the future. But for example, Hummer EV, the tri-motor version, can only tow 7,500 pounds. So we had to run that in the 5,000-pound category, because that's the maximum it can do. So you can't compare that vehicle to Cybertruck and Lightning and other things that we're running on the 10,000-pound test. So ultimately, it's a hardcore test. We have a highway portion, city portion, and mountain passes make up the bulk of it. It gives us a good review of how a vehicle tows.
What were your surprises, both good and bad? What met your expectations? Any things that stood out to you?
Well, what we didn't really realize when we ran the loop for the first time, I have to give a huge shout out to my friend Will for creating this loop. He's the one who was real hardcore from here and was like, this is the road, loop you need to do. And we adjusted it a little bit based off of what he said. I found a little bit harder mountain climb on the way up, and then we mosey on over. But the dirt road section is a pretty grueling test. I mean, that's a test of suspension when it's under load with a trailer, and it's all washboarded out up the hills. So the tires need to stay on the ground, and you need the traction to get up. And I was driving the Silverado EV, which you'll see in an upcoming one, and I was wide open throttle the whole way up the dirt hills. And it was like, I don't know if this thing's going to make it up. And then certain vehicles like Hummer EV, as an example, just walked its way up there without even noticing a thing, just like crawled up there.
Which one walked up?
The Hummer EV.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's just got those big fat tires that just can soak up the bumps and crazy suspension. And again, we had half the weight on the Hummer that we did the Silverado because of tow ratings. So it's been a really cool loop. We're not going to hammer all the videos out at once. We've just been filming with the vehicles we have now. We'll, you know, space them out so we don't overload everyone with EV towing content, which we've done this week. But that's fine. I mean, everyone wants to learn how these things operate. At least I do. So that's what we've been testing.
And from an engineering perspective, I guess the regen part is, if anyone thinks it's all about getting up to the top of a hill and actually coming down the other side is really interesting as well, because thermal management, how much regen you get, how much you have to use the brake or not, I guess that becomes an interesting part of teaching people about EVs, the engineering of it as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Cybertruck had major regen limitations right after the start of the first hill, and they continued throughout the test. And whether that's a thermal issue or a cell issue, it's definitely showing that, okay, we're reaching some limits. My Rivian ran into regen limits without a trailer on this loop. So it's no joke. On camera, sometimes I look at it and I'm like, this looks so easy. But then in person, you're like, I can only see the sky right now.
So, wow. Yeah.
It's nice to have those undercarriage cameras on the Hummer in that situation. I guess with the Hummer, you didn't really need it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're off road. We're still on public roads here, so it's manageable. It's just our trailer is pretty big, so it's actually like when you have the Silverado plus the trailer, was pretty hard to maneuver up the hill, actually. So you know, you got to take the widest line possible just so you don't fall off a cliff.
And are these all public roads? Are you meeting people coming the opposite direction, or are you using private roads for your testing?
No, this is all public roads. This is county road. It's actually County Road 69, so we call it the 69 Hill Climb. And it's just an enjoyable thing to go and run. And everything here is right in our backyard. It's all publicly accessible, and you know, that's what we want to do more of. We're really lucky to do all of our testing in Colorado. We moved here to do vehicle testing, and this is part of the reason why we have some of the best roads for pushing electric vehicles to and beyond their limits sometimes.
So how is the thermal capabilities of the Cybertruck on this route?
Yeah, I don't think thermals were an issue. I don't think we've run into thermals on any EV yet.
Okay.
But I think we've run into oddities about cell recharging issues and blended brake issues, and the Cybertruck so far is, out of all the ones I've tested, which to be fair, the Silverado EV is way beefier than Cybertruck, but that's sort of performed the worst out of them. The Model X did great with the 5,000 pound trailer, but again, that's the maximum rating of the Model X, but only 5,000 pounds, no big deal. So we're learning that the 5,000 pound category is pretty easy, but we still want to review vehicles that don't just tow 10,000 pounds. So we're going to keep that two category system, and it gives us a more of a review and less of a hardcore stress test, but it's still interesting. We're logging all the efficiencies throughout the route. We're logging the state of charge check-ins throughout the route. We DC charge all the vehicles to 100% before we leave. And so that way the batteries are warm, and we're logging percentage point check-ins. And actually, the Cybertruck, we did not DC charge at the start of the trip. That was the first one we ran. And when, you know, next time we run it, I'm sure we'll do it again just to update the numbers with whatever procedures we end up changing along the way. We have this one, so we'll just run it again.
Sweet. Nice. So this is a 10,000 pound challenge with the Rivian R1T on the back on the trailer. So what do you put on the trailer for the 5,000 pound limit?
Yeah, so it's like just under 10. It's like 9,900 with the Rivian. But then we figured like there's always some stuff in the Rivian anyway. It's probably close to 10 by the time we get there. And the smart car is the perfect weight to get to 5,000 pounds with the trailer and the smart car.
Oh, that explains that picture you showed. Oh, I need to find that. You have a convertible towing.
I saw a pic of one of the doggos in the smart car, and I thought the sun had come out, so you got the smart car out of the garage.
I thought it was really funny because the Hummer EV is a black and white electric convertible, and then we had our black and white electric convertible towed behind it, which it's very rare to have electric convertibles.
Awesome.
And you had two, and really what I saw the best comment, Kyle, somebody commented Tonka truck towing a Hot Wheels. That was like the best comment on Twitter. It was perfect for that.
Yeah, it's basically what it was. But that's honestly all the tri-motor Hummer EV. It was just a little bit less than it could do. It can only do 7,500. I heard the dual motor Hummer EV will actually do 12,500 like the Silverado 3WT EV. So
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's odd.
Kyle, just curious. Could you give us a quick one sentence, like what surprised you about each car? Like Cybertruck thermal sucked, Lightning, the brakes couldn't handle it. Like, is there like one thing you could say quickly about those trucks?
Yeah, we haven't run the Lightning yet, only because Ford gave us one without max tow package. So I have to borrow a friend's truck with max tow. Our Lightning is only rated.
Come get mine.
Our Lightning's only rated for 7,500 pounds. But max tow puts you up to 10,000, which makes no sense to me because it doesn't seem to adjust any suspension components. It's just the additional compressor, I thought. But
fly Dave to Jersey and make him drive it back.
Yeah, but each truck. So Cybertruck definitely has some software to finish up and really needs more regen capabilities. The Model X towed really well. I mean, very, very well. But again, only 5,000 pound and no integrated brake controller and no 4-pin connection, which was a little bit annoying. The Hummer EV is just can't tow enough and blends too much trailer brakes when you're regenning. So I ended up turning the trailer brakes off to try and recapture more energy to make it more efficient. It's also extremely inefficient, but that's just Hummer EV anyway. And the Silverado EV definitely has the most range and everything. Could actually use a bit more power when towing 10,000 pounds. It's okay, but you do have to go wide open on some of the uphills in terms of power. And yeah, has the same problem with Hummer EV on the brake blending situation. We're just learning a lot about the vehicles. I mean, there's a ton that we're learning, and they're all in these videos, and they'll probably end up being roughly 30 minutes long each, which I think is reasonable for a towing review of a vehicle.
You can't make a 30-minute video.
I mean, it'll be however long it is for me to explain it.
Kyle, let's put that out right now. It's not going to be 30 minutes.
Yeah, I actually think they will be, but if they're not, too bad. Don't watch
we'll
it.
See.
I don't know.
No, people love your long videos. I just don't know if you're capable of making a 30-minute video. Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe not.
Right. I didn't think I could make an hour and a half video, but it ended up our race to Florida ended up being an hour and a half. So, I mean, your content's great and people watch it. So why work hard to make it shorter? You know,
there's just no incentive. A, we put all the information in the long video. So like, if you want to learn about it, you got to watch it. If you don't want to learn about it, why are you watching the video anyway? And,
there's entertaining.
And like, what would we cut out? I mean, we did this towing video over the Rockies this week. That was 2.5 hours or something. Jordan initially called me, said the video's 5 hours. I was like, okay, that's a bit crazy. But 2.5 hours for towing, you know, it took us a full day to do it. That's a pretty, you know, that's a snapshot of what actually happened.
I know.
So what did happen? Like, so I guess towing over like 500 miles over the Rockies and back again, it sounds like it should really lay bare most of the issues with towing an EV and charging, actually, because this was like a charging race you did in this other video.
So you mean the one where we went over the Rockies with the truck?
Yeah. 500 mile.
Yep. So we had Rivian R1T, Cybertruck, Silverado EV with a big battery.
4WT.
Yeah, and Lightning. With the big battery. All trucks had the big battery, of course, except for the Rivian. That did not have the max pack. That was large pack, quad motor as well. But that came in second place. So that was pretty, you know, the max pack dual motor thing wouldn't have changed the running order at all. Silverado just smoked it. But my biggest takeaway was I drove an electric truck with a trailer, but it wasn't light. It was 6,500 pounds. And, you know, of course, had a car on the back, a heavy electric Model 3. and I drove it from Denver to Grand Junction, which is like most normal people that don't know about electric cars. Like, you can drive to Grand Junction in an electric car. That's crazy. And so I did it towing, and I didn't even stop to charge. And I arrived halfway with 14% remaining. I then charged for just under 1 hour and drove all the way back to Denver without stopping in the Silverado. This is unheard of. It's crazy. And that's just what happens when you slap a massive battery in your truck. So, right. You know, it had 215 kilowatt hours usable, and I was just cruising around. It was literally no impact to my trip whatsoever. It was truly amazing. Big annoyance, though, is not having a front charge port. We learned that on this trip.
Right.
We knew it, but we really learned it on this trip, how annoying a rear charge port is when towing. It should be just not allowed. You should have, if you have a tow hitch on your electric vehicle, there should be a secondary charge port up front.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem. I've been thinking a lot about charge receptacle locations like this week. And really, you know, I really think that the Nissan Leaf and the Hyundai Kona, Kia Niro EV have it right with it on the front, you know. And the Rivian R1T, I guess, it's on the front as well. So those cars, but, you know, in the middle. So you can charge them. You can pull up into a Tesla supercharger, and you don't have to worry about if the cord's long enough. It's going to reach. It's right there. Right.
And even with the Rivian charge port kind of being in the non-native place for the supercharger network, a lot of the new stations, they're installing them right in the center of the spaces. So like our new station here, I can pull up with my Rivian and I'm not blocking two spaces. The cable just reaches.
Right. Perfect. That's the way it should be, I think. And then also
there will be extension cables out there very soon. You know,
from Tesla. That sounds sketchy, Tom. I think either from Tesla or whatever. And
I find it hard to believe Tesla would put something out that didn't integrate well with their ecosystem and was safe.
Totally. I don't know. Their Cybertruck doesn't integrate very well with their ecosystem.
That's a great point. What about cable cooling and thermals with extensions? That just seems fraught with it doesn't work.
I hope there's a little chip in there that interrupts the signal somehow and will derate based on temperature or have a boost profile set or something.
Right. Yeah. You put a social video up recently and you took the Rivian to a new Bucky's stop or a new supercharger's there. And that seemed to be in a location that just suited the Rivian really well. You didn't even stretch the cable. You just pulled up, you're like straight in. I thought, I was trying to get my head around the geography of that supercharger.
It's confusing to Tesla owners, though. I watched a couple back in last night and they're like, I have to stretch the cable this much to get to my car. It works. I mean, it definitely works, but it is a little bit just awkward for everyone, the placement, but it kind of works for everyone.
Okay. I was going to ask something.
So anyway, the towing race is out if anyone wants to see it. We also have a summary on the Out of Spec podcast if you don't want to see it. And, you know, it's all there.
All right. So you did no pull-through charges. So who won the race? What was the Silverado EV?
Yeah, I was home sleeping before the guys finished in the rest of the trucks.
Okay. So they had to stop more than once, I guess, to...
Four times.
Really?
And the Cybertruck, five times. But Tymon messed up on the Cybertruck. To be fair, Tymon really let the Cybertruck down. He chose all the wrong chargers, but also there's a lot of wrong chargers you can choose. I mean, Tymon's a pretty serious EV road tripper. He's done cannonballs with us. Yeah. He should know what he's doing, but he just did not think to check or remember that Tesla made 120 kilowatt stations.
Oh.
He's so used to only hitting V3s everywhere. So he went to the first station he went to was 120 kilowatts, and it was just... Just let the Cybertruck down right there. But it's not like the Cybertruck would have been anywhere near what the Silverado could do. So we, you know, still posted the video, obviously, but and gave time in a bunch of crap for not optimizing.
So I guess what another takeaway is that there's enough infrastructure to do this. If they had to charge four times, they could find chargers to go charge at to actually complete the route.
Oh, between here and Grand Junction, there's probably 20 DC fast chargers.
Right.
They're everywhere in the mountains.
Sweet. That's good. So, I guess so. But for towing, like hardcore towing, I guess Silverado is the way to go right now then?
Oh, no question. That's the beast. I mean, you can't buy one. That's the sad part. It's a fleet only. There's a few for sale on Auto Trader and cars.com. And I think they still require a fleet account if you purchase those. But they'll be popping up used here pretty soon. Some, you know, Hertz bought a bunch of them. Others bought a bunch. They'll get cycled in and out of fleets, and they'll end up in private customer hands here. And that's going to be freaking awesome.
They launched the 3WT this week as well, but only took $5,000 off the price.
No, so that the 3WT had already been out.
Oh, that's already out.
Yeah, they launched the 3WT one fleet, which is like the real base one. So it's like steel wheels, nothing nice on the inside. I mean, that's what these trucks are. These are the work trucks, but this is like the fleet work truck. So it's really stripped out.
And that's $75,000.
No, it's $65,000.
65, still expensive, but that's
better. But it's 180 kilowatt hours usable.
Yeah.
That's not, that's an interesting deal, interesting value.
Not that much more to go for WT and just get the nice stuff and more range.
Yeah, but if you're a fleet customer,
every set, like every dollar counts.
Yeah, and you're buying 50, 100 range. Of them.
Honestly, they should come out with like a 75 kilowatt hour version for like $45,000, and that would be fine for most fleets.
That's what the Ram Charge is doing.
Yeah, well, that'll have the
can't wait.
Gas engine, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. Is that, I guess we're probably through with trucks for a little bit. Anything else you want to say about that, Kyle?
Well, we took them all to the racetrack yesterday, which is important testing.
Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that yet or not. Okay.
Yeah. So we did a driving dynamics video. It'll go up probably Sunday is my guess. Yeah, maybe Monday. I don't know. But either way, it's a full, like, here's how they all drive. We've done everything with them. We're going to go off-roading this weekend with them. And then I think we're done. Then I think we've covered our bases.
Right. So how are they on the track? Like,
totally wildly different, each one of them.
That's right. I can imagine,
like, insanely different. You know, the Rivian is like fun and drifty and almost felt like a sports car out there in comparison to the other vehicles. And but then like overheats after one lap. It just like just can't handle it. So it's like, give me this great chassis, this great powertrain, and then no thermal ability whatsoever. I mean, zero. You get a couple skids in and then it goes red, turtle mode, nothing. Sorry.
Interesting. I wonder if the dual motor does any better with thermal management.
Yeah, they say it should. It's oil cooled. So the quad motor system is not oil cooling. It's just a water glycol jacket cooling on the outside of the stator.
Do you know if Rivian's going to make their own motors for the quad? I mean, they make their own motors now for the dual motor.
Yeah, when I went to the dual motor launch, I'm like, why don't you just take four of these and make it your quad motor system now? And they're like, yeah, that'd be a good idea, wink. Like, yeah, that's what they're going to do.
Okay, yeah. Awesome.
So that'll probably launch with refresh is my guess.
Okay. Wow. It's kind of struck me like refresh Rivian. What do you do with that? Because can you change the fascia, like the face design at all?
No, you don't change the design. You make it a technical update. You make it charge way better. You make it have way better thermal ability. You give it more power now that Cybertruck is faster. You know, it's got to do so many things better. It's got to have more efficiency with the heat pump, which we know it'll have, and better driver assistance, which it's not very good driver assistance. Right now, it requires pre-mapped roads, which is just annoying. So there's a lot they can improve, but it's already a pretty up-there product.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed my time in it for sure. All right. So, Tom, speaking of racing, I see you put your video up of driving the Polestar 4 on a frozen lake up in the Arctic Circle. Deliveries of that car start happening sometime in the next 3 months. So I just wanted to ask, it's a pretty premium car, and it's priced like that. What do you think will delight owners about it the most?
It's hard to say. You know, it's like a performance SUV, you know, and I just don't know how many people are in the market for that. You know, it outkicks like the market that it's going to be appealing to, in my opinion. This mid-size SUVs that people use as family haulers, it like performs way too good for that segment, in my opinion, at least, you know, at least on ice. I mean, it was nuts how well the torque vectoring system works. It was designed by BorgWarner. They call it, I think, TVDC, the torque vectoring dual clutch technology. This was really like an engineering visit to show what they can do in extreme cold weathers on frozen surfaces. And, you know, Polestar, two things, is a performance brand, and they're also, you know, from their roots are with Volvo and Nordic country, where, you know, everybody drives with studded snow tires, you know, half of the year. So the vehicle has to be able to work well in those environments. And that's really what the purpose of this was, to show us how well it performs and how well the traction assist systems work. And it was amazing to me. I don't have a lot of experience driving on frozen lakes. I did once, just fooling around once, but not really to try to test a vehicle out. Kyle really should have been on this one. I know he wanted to. That's, if you're watching on the camera now, you're seeing the track they had set up on the lake. And, you know, until, you know, we turned off the systems, I almost couldn't make it slide. You know, it was that good. And most owners don't want the vehicle to, you know, kick out and have fun with it. They just want to know if they're coming into a turn that's a little icy, the vehicle is just going to do all the work for them. They got their kiddos in the back and they want to be able to just navigate around whatever comes on the road. And the vehicle performed really well. You see right there, Joachim, I think it was Rideholm. I know Kyle knows him also. He's their head of chassis development for Polestar. He was in the vehicle with me. And, you know, I would love this vehicle personally, but I'm trying to figure out, is this going to do well here? It starts at 74,000 with the performance pack. It's 84,000. It's a hell of a vehicle, but price wise, it's going to be a tough sell here in the U.S. I don't know how many people are looking for, you know, a 5-seat SUV with that kind of performance. I think people would rather get a vehicle that fits in that class for 15,000-20,000 less, that maybe, you know, doesn't have 671 pound feet of torque. It's hard for me to really understand where this fits in. I think it's a wonderful vehicle, but it's almost as if they over-engineered it. They put too much effort into making it an incredibly performing SUV. And I think sales are going to be hurt because the price is just, and that's, they just slashed the prices like $10,000. The performance pack version was going to be like starting at 90,000. And, you know, this is, even at 84, it's going to be a tough sell, and that's starting. So, I don't know how well it's going to do. I think it's a wonderfully engineered, crossover, you know, compact SUV, but, I'm concerned that it's not going to sell a lot because it's just too expensive. We always talk about picking up EVs 3 years down the road or 2 years down the road used. This would be an amazing, you know, $40,000 pickup, you know, once it's, you know, used market 2 years old with 8,000 miles. It's an amazing vehicle for that. But I don't know, it's 75 to 85,000 starting. I don't know how well it's going to do here.
What do you think about that, Kyle or Dave? Actually, hey, Dave, good to see you back there.
Hey guys. Hi. How are you?
All right. Hey, so what's your take? I mean, you trade a lot of cars back and forth. You've been in a lot of. What do you think about the addressable market for this thing?
I actually saw the Polestar 3 in the showroom in New York City a while back, and mm-hmm. I thought it was a, you know, wonderfully designed car. I'm happy to hear. I actually didn't realize the kind of performance, you know, that you're talking about coming out of this vehicle. It sounds like. I agree with you that it's probably overpriced for what the majority of the consumers are looking for. But you never know. I mean, it depends on, you got to keep in mind, this is a global launch, I would imagine. So they're going to be sending these out to many different markets and not just the US, but you know, 90 grand or 85 grand for this, where it wouldn't qualify for the tax credit with the performance pack, you know, might be a tough sell, but then again, for those people spending that kind of coin, maybe they wouldn't qualify anyway. And this truck wouldn't, because it's made, you know, outside the United States, as I think about it.
It's made in South Carolina.
Oh, that's right. It is made in South Carolina.
Yeah, Volvo's Ridgefield
plant. Oh, that's right. So the base one would qualify, but the performance pack wouldn't. That'll really create a...
They have to adjust that.
They're going to have to adjust that, yeah. But look, I sat...
They dropped to 10,000.
Yeah, they're going to need to drop it more.
Yeah. I sat in the vehicle, 6'5". I fit really well. I thought it was great, but it wasn't anything crazy different that I would say, wow, I got to have that, you know? And It's a little bit of an odd brand, especially here in the States. Mm-hmm. So I wish him the best of luck. It's good to hear it drove well, Tom.
The big question is this or Porsche Macan EV?
Yeah. Ooh, that's, I mean, I guess it comes down to almost to like design and styling and I guess an interior feel as well.
And also driving dynamics will be totally different.
Right. Right.
And that's the thing, U.S. buyers, if we're talking U.S., you know, you ask somebody, you know, do you want a Porsche Macan sitting in your driveway or do you want a Polestar 3?
Right.
You know, we understand vehicles way more than the average consumer. But, you know, a lot of people, when you get up into that price range, a lot of it is prestige and image. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know we don't care about that, but a lot of people do. And, right. You know, if this could have launched at, you know, with the dual motor long range at 55,000, the performance pack at 65,000, 68,000, you know, I'd say, wow, this is an incredible vehicle. And I think they're going to sell well, but where it's positioned, I'm concerned that they're not going to have a lot of takers. And it's unfortunate because I think it's a really, really nice vehicle. Mm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
I think this is more desirable than the Macan EV, personally. I think it's cooler. It's quirkier. It's got I own a Polestar, so I think it fits in with my garage nicely. But, like, there's just something. When I sat in this car, I was lucky enough to have the first video tour of this car, I think. And when I posted that, I thought no one was going to watch it. There would be zero interest, and the video would tank. And the opposite happened. It rocketed, did like 100,000 views in a couple of days, which back then for us was pretty big. Mm. So there is interest in this car. It does have some serious cred. I don't necessarily love the idea of doing torque vectoring with the clutch system in the back, but it can be okay. Just the response time is sometimes a little bit slow for my liking. But again, it's not, it's there just to check a feature off the list and work reasonably well. I think what you described, Tom, a lot of the safety systems Volvo does a great job of, but most cars also have pretty good ESP and control systems in extreme environments. So I was really curious in watching your video when you turned ESP off and watching the guys drift it and the B-roll and stuff really gives you a chance to show, okay, they really did engineer this thing to be fun and enjoyable, as did Porsche with the Macan. So, yeah, I mean, this is going to be the fun. It's like work's not going to be boring for the next year as we try and figure out these problems.
Yeah, it's never completely off, as you probably know. You know, right. But it removes enough of it so you can have some fun for sure. Well, I did a couple laps with Joachim driving, and as well, you know, he's not just, you know, head of chassis development. He's also, you know, like probably their best test driver. And, you know, we took that whole course sideways, you know, with him just not letting up on the whole thing, which was, you know, legions above my skill level on ice. But it was the vehicle just was able to do whatever he wanted it to do. So I give them credit. To me, it's almost over engineered for like 99% of the people that would ever buy one. But I hope that doesn't cost them. What's that?
That's most.
Yeah, no, I know. But even I think even more so. I think all perhaps all the money they put into making this such a fantastic performing vehicle has pushed the price up to the stratosphere where I don't know how people are going to respond to that. You know, when you look at the SUVs that are in that class, you know, that size 5-seat SUVs, you look at the prices of those and you say, well, you know, why is this $20,000 better or $15,000 better, you know?
Your point about them getting cheap in 2 or 3 years will happen. These will tank, and that's going to be the buy.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to pick up one of these for $45,000, even $50,000.
No, they'll be in the 30s in no time. Yeah.
You think?
Well, look at e-trons. They're 20s.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, I don't, yeah.
Yeah, they're just going to boop.
I feel like the Polestar, it's probably just a spec above the e-tron in like engineering and design and
yeah, but it's going to happen. Every car depreciates. So this is going to, and I think the general public still doesn't know what Polestar is. So right. I know that because I drive mine around. They're like, what is that? I'm like, it's a Polestar. And they're like, what are you saying to me? And so I just tell everyone it's a Volvo now. Yeah. So it makes it easier.
You almost could have to do that before, but really now you can't, Kyle. Now that Polestar's, I mean, Volvo's really, making that separation. Yeah, but I get that all the time, too. Online. People ask me all the time. I saw like a funky looking electric Volvo and I'm like, did it have a different logo? And they're like, yeah, it was like a star. And I explained. So they don't really know, you know, that there's this is like a its own brand.
Right. Oh, should be interesting. Looks like sounds like Polestar has some marketing work ahead of them. If you know, if they want to be, I think they need to make themselves like an it brand, you know, like the thing to buy. So they need to, you know, some sort of marketing outreach with celebrity or whatever, you know, it takes to get that to happen. I don't know. I think
one of the things, Dom, sorry to interrupt, and I do that a lot. I know. Please. I'm sorry. One of the things that Polestar talked about in this press meet was that they have multiple polls taken. This surprised me a little. Multiple polls, you know, they do old market research. And when they ask people in America, list the top performance brands, and they gave the names of the companies. You know, you didn't have to pull it out of your hat. On all the different polls, Polestar was number three. Porsche was number one. I forget who was number two. But Polestar was number three. So people do identify it as a performance brand.
There is no way that data is accurate. People are going to go.
They had Porsche, three different surveys.
Lamborghini,
where they thousands Ferrari. Of people. They might not have included, Kyle, they might not have included the super high end, like, you know, crazy luxury brands like Ferrari and Lamborghini. It might have been like, you know, $100,000 and less. These are the brands selling cars. List the performance brands. Oh, that's at least the information Polestar gave us. Exact
people they pulled. There's no way. Maybe they pulled like current
Polestar. I was surprised owners. To hear that too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know.
All right. So, Tom, this week you also released your Electron Vortex NACS to CCS1 adapter review. Now, we should say that these are third-party adapters. They aren't approved by automakers for use with their vehicles, but knowing it's going to take some time for people to get their official adapters, and we'll buy a third-party one anyway. So you're reviewing a couple of the main units that appear to have some amount of decent engineering, I guess. So you've already reviewed the adapter from A to Z last week, and this week you showed us the Electron. So just how did it hold up to your testing?
So, the limited testing. I've used it a bunch so far already. Okay. Every opportunity that I can now, I'm using both the Electron and the A to Z to charge my Lightning and my Rivian. I'm lucky enough, I have two vehicles that are authorized to use the Tesla network. So far, I haven't had any problems with any of them. And that's all we can do. And you have to go back to what you said, Dom, the fact that we know people are going to buy these. And that's really why I'm trying to shed a little light on these. The Ford customers, Rivian customers, and now all the other OEMs that are going to eventually be authorized. I've had people send me emails, Ford customers and Rivian customers, Ford customers, saying they applied for their adapter. And it said, like, your estimated delivery time is October. So, you know, people are anxious to get these and use them, and it's going to take longer than 2024. There will be people that do not apply for their adapter in 2024 that don't even get it till 2025. We know people aren't going to wait. They're going to go out and buy adapters. So I'm doing this to try to highlight some of the ones that I think maybe are better made than the other ones. And it's still very early on. I mean, the only real test I could do was keep using it. I dropped them, see if they break. All my charge recordings now, I'm constantly taking a temperature of the unit every 5 minutes. That's surface temperature. So it's still cool out now. So the adapters are getting the benefit of, say, 60 degrees out. So the air is cooling them a little bit. I can't wait till it gets a little bit hotter. I'd almost, you know, as soon as it gets like hot in Arizona or something, I might fly out there and see if I could use it like when it's 115 degrees. But you have to keep in mind, both of these companies have told me, and companies lie, that they have designed it to conform with UL2252, which is going to be the standard that adapters get, EV charging adapters get tested at. Right now, there is no standard. Even the Tesla adapter is not safety certified. So we don't know. That could be the worst engineered adapter on the market. We don't know that. That would shock me if that turned out to be true.
Well, we'll find out because you're gonna test that one too, right?
Yeah. So there's a little weird thing about this. I told everybody that I was gonna review the A to Z. I was gonna review the Electron, and then the official Tesla adapter. I did my two reviews on A to Z and Electron. I'm holding back reviewing the Tesla adapter because, as Kyle and I said on previous shows, the adapter that Ford gave us from Tesla is not the final version. It was like an early version prototype. And Ford told us, we're giving you this adapter, but you have to give it back to us when we ship you the real one. So I don't think it's fair for me to do a full review of this Ford adapter or the Tesla adapter I have now, because evidently there's something on it that they're going to improve upon. So I'm waiting to get that. As soon as I get that, I'm going to review that one. And then I'm going to do one review with all three of them and talk and make like charts on temperature and robust construction, size, weight. I bought like a new digital scale so I could weigh each one and just so give people a complete view of everything about it. You know, the Electron adapter is the biggest and the heaviest of all of them. So you would think that that means maybe it's the best made. Not necessarily. I dropped it a few times. The one time I dropped it, it already chipped. The A to Z seems like it has a more robust shell. It seems like you could drop the thing a million times and the only thing that might break is the latch. Thing is, I don't like the A to Z's manual NACS lock on the bottom. You have to manually lock the NACS connector to the adapter. I don't like that. The other two adapters do it automatically. But the official Tesla adapter, I really don't like how you unlock the latch. I don't know if Kyle has any issue with it, but it's in the adapter. You got to stick your finger in it. And it's the hardest or the most cumbersome adapter when you're holding the adapter and the connector to get it and unlatch it. I mean, that's just a usability thing. That's not a safety issue. But if you were to tell me all three adapters were equally engineered, the Tesla adapter might be the last one that I use for ergonomics. But just ergonomics. So we'll continue to follow up on this. There's going to be other adapters coming to market. I don't know, if I'm going to review any of the other ones from these other companies. I picked A to Z and Electron because I've used their adapters for years, other types of adapters, and they've been relatively well made. So that's where we're at with that. And yeah, Brandon,
I'm sure this is nothing to worry about, these third party ones cropping up online, I'm sure. Sorry, that's sarcasm, by the way, in case anyone takes it seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's going to be some really low quality ones. There's going to be
CCS
horrible ones
too.
Out there.
Like, yeah. What's this? That's CCS2. What's that all about?
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, this is a friend of ours who roofing tracker Jose. I guess some companies are sending him or want to send him some third party adapters. This looks like they don't know what they're even doing because they're suggesting CCS2 in a CCS1 market. But
that is no use to me at all.
Right. All right, Tom, are you doing all right over there? We're having some video connection issues today. We lost Martin a few times back there some time ago, and now Tom, you've been frozen in that position. I don't know if you want to disconnect.
Oh, really?
Or reconnect.
But... I'm still frozen.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
How cold is it there in New Jersey?
It's not cold at all. I think it's my laptop. I think I'm gonna get a new laptop. All right, let me jump out and jump back on.
Cool. Okay.
All right.
I want to talk to him about there he is.
There we go.
I want to talk to him about charging. So Tom and I earlier this week we talked to the founder of and CEO of Gravity. I'm not sure if they go by Gravity Mobility or officially or not, but their name's Gravity.
I'm back?
Yeah.
Yes, you're good. Right on. So Tom and I talked to Moshe Cohen, the founder of Gravity this week. And so Gravity made a whole pile of headlines a few weeks back when they opened up a charging center in Manhattan with 500 kilowatt capable charging, they say. So this week it announced 200 kilowatt curbside charging for urban centers. So we had and you can check our the Batteries Included YouTube channel for that episode talking with him. That went pretty well, I think, actually. But Tom, you went there and visited them. And so you want to tell us a little bit about what you thought after seeing it in person? I know, or should we wait for your video?
No, I'll talk about it. You know, I haven't even started editing that, but I'm going to do it probably today and tomorrow. Actually, Today, you know what I have? One of my followers has a Hummer EV. And if you guys know the issues I had in the past trying to get a good charge recording, he supposedly has all up-to-date software and has said that it's been charging fine. And he's driving here from Pennsylvania. And right after the show, The two of us are going to go to a DC fast charger and see if I can get a good clean recording. Okay. So put that to the side.
Yeah, that guy's awesome, by the way. And I've been doing a bunch of this 24 module charging this week. Sorry to the electrical grid of Colorado. But they charge much better. But Tom, that you have a 5 degrees Celsius arrival window. If you are out of that arrival window, you will not have a good charging experience.
Yeah, and I know. And I know if you put on the preconditioning too early, right? It gets too warm.
The trick is navigate to it using the built-in software and you'll be okay. But do not manually precondition.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'll do that because I haven't really used one since I did the previous recording. So you know more about this than me.
You need to use a charging station that's, I think, the BTC ones, not the Signet ones. The BTC ones will output the full power. You can't use the GM Ultium sites, the high power Delta sites. You only get 175 kilowatts on those. GM branded stations don't work with GM cars. But you have to go to an EA BTC because then you'll get almost the maximum, but Hummer EV will peak at almost 380 kilowatts.
Wow.
And there's no public charger that can do that. So you'll be charger limited for most of your charging.
Yeah, no. Well, I have those one EA site, the North Brunswick site, that I've been able to get really good like Tycon recordings, and it never seems like it's limited. Well, that's the 800 volt system, but I've never seemed to be limited from this one charger. And I also was thinking about going to an EVgo, but not let me see. I actually reached out to
you can
to
use an EVgo Signet station.
No, not the Signets.
Use a Delta.
Yeah, they literally told me don't use the Signets right now because of
so you can't I'm use not, the Signets and you I'm can't not gonna use get the a good, Deltas.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, no, but not Deltas, not Signets. I just got the anyway, they gave me a site that they said I should not have an issue with, and I forget which one it was. But
if you can go there, that's the best because they give you the voltage reading of the
power. That's what I wanted to get, and that's why I reached out to EVgo to talk to him about it. But you know, there's the most of the ones in my area are Signets, and I can't find this.
And make sure HVAC is off. That's a big one.
Yeah. No, everything will be off. But so we'll see. I'm gonna probably try the EVgo, and if I'm not getting a good response, I'll go down to that one EA station that I always seem to have good charge recordings with.
But the guy who's going to bring it to you, I can't remember his name. Is it Michael? He's super Jeff. Okay, he's super awesome, and he is actually I think bringing his Hummer out to Colorado to have Colton detail it at some point in the near future.
He's going to be pulling up any minute. I could like bring him on the show.
Oh, cool. Well, Coleman said, hey, if we don't see him, he's awesome. He's the guy who I reached out to when I needed a Hummer for videos here. And he found our new friend Patrick on the forums, and Patrick came up and brought his truck up yesterday. So this guy's connected, knows all the GM stuff.
Yeah. So, and he said the truck's ready to rock. It's got software updates. It's good for good recordings. He's been testing it. So we'll see. Hopefully I'll get a good clean recording. I can finally publish that video. And I have like some behind the scenes information about what was going on. You guys remember I was trying to get information from GM. I kept emailing them. They were giving me, you know, it seemed like the runaround at the time, but now I've recently learned why they were giving me the runaround because it created a big, you know, thing back there because all the data I was sending them was correct. But they didn't, I guess they didn't want to publicly say, yeah, you're right. You know, it's effed up, you know, but I was able to talk to somebody recently that was willing to tell me what was going on behind the scenes. So I'll talk about that when I put out the video. So this started off with Dominic talking about the gravity station, which I visited yesterday, 24 stations, 500 kilowatt max. And I couldn't believe the site's packed already.
Oh, really?
I couldn't believe it. There was like almost complete utilization, but it's not like people know about it. The big reason was the city has this like taxi service system now with Toyota BZ4X of all vehicles. And so they're pulling in all day long. So they're not pulling a lot of power. Right. And Moshe actually, like, and we talked about this, was like disappointed. He was like, I built this freaking site here that, you know, it's 24 stations that could be like charging like 24 Taycans at once. And it's just filled up with these BZ4 that are wasting an hour to get like 50 kilowatts in their battery packs. But it was funny that he had that opinion, which is just what I was thinking.
Tom, how does it work? I listened in and out on the podcast yesterday in between shoots, but it has a enough grid connection from an existing building where they didn't have to do any site upgrades, which is unique, but glad they found that. Right. And then the DC chargers are whose hardware is it?
They say they make it, right?
Yeah, it's their own hardware. Like they
buying power modules and then assembling it and calling it their own, which a lot of companies do, or
they have to be.
Yeah. So the power modules in the power boxes, I didn't do a deep dive into that. They were locked, but I'm going to go back and do that. It was, he had like 50 people lined up for interviews and everything yesterday because everyone was there.
What's the interest? Because it just looks like a bunch of plugs in a parking lot. I don't know why it's gotten so much attention. What was special about this?
Well, it's really the only the only solution that would work like in an underground garage like that, Kyle. It has a much smaller footprint, and his software allows him to do. So put out such huge amount of power without doing service upgrades to the area. I mean, I asked him, I said, if 24 Taycans pull in here and all plug in and they all want maximum power, is this whole building going to like shut
down? Yeah,
but every
charging hardware has site level load limiting. I mean, that's pretty basic. I have it at the office going in now. So like what I just don't understand.
Yeah, but you also bring in more thing existing. Had power. You had existing. I have so many people reaching out to me, building owners in New York City for the last 2 years asking me, you got to give me a solution. Con Ed wants $750,000 to be able for us to upgrade my site so that we can install 4 DC fast chargers in our garage for the people that live here. We have, you know, 500 tenants or whatever. And it seems like whatever he has going on the back end is circumventing that issue. And I don't really personally, I don't understand how it is working. It seems like, you know, magic to me, but
buffered at all?
No, it's not battery buffered.
No.
There's a line on electricity and you
I know
above it. So he's doing load leveling, site management. Does he say that he can run every single port? So when you say 500 kilowatts, is he just saying 500 amps at 1,000 volts, or what is that limitation?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, 500 amps at 1,000 volts.
It's the same as every other charger. Yeah. It just doesn't have that top end curve. Right. So but we've looked at is someone who's just like put in – I'm not against new chargers.
No, I know.
I'm not against it. I just really can't figure out why this is making front pages everywhere, because it looks like someone just put a bunch of power modules and some cables, which is fairly simple.
It might not be a lot more than that, but what it is a solution that underground garages in New York City – can use, and there's currently no other hardware that can fit them. It's ceiling mounted or wall mounted or ceiling mounted with cable retraction on a ceiling, and it works in the city. And for the first time, these garages now, Kyle, he's offering a solution. And so many people in urban areas that are so tight for space, you can't have a DC fast charger mounted on the ground. In these underground garages, your bumper has to touch the wall. And then there's barely enough room for somebody to back out. This solution, what he's claiming, will fit in any underground garage. And even the power modules can be, you know, put totally remotely. And what he does is it's not just the building that he's tapping power from. He's tapping power from like that, the area. Like he said, we might be tapping power from like 3 buildings on both sides of us. And we're uniquely managing the power so that everybody has as much power as they need and nothing gets derated.
So how about the cable management? That seems unique. Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen a bunch of overhead cable management systems, but this looks like it's
like a
circle friendly
yeah.
one. Okay, a lot of the overhead ones for fleet use are intended, and they're pretty basic, and yeah, they work, but this seems, okay, maybe a bit more elegant. But the little bricks that they're showing everywhere, on the side of the road. Those are not the power modules. That's not a 500 kilowatt power module.
No,
those
I didn't even see what brick you're talking about.
Oh, it's like a picture of a gravity thing on the street side or something. I don't know.
Those are the new curve. That's totally different than what I went to look at yesterday.
Okay.
Those are the new pole mounted 200 kilowatt units that are going to be mounted up on poles,
right?
What's that?
Oh, maybe that could be. Is that a dispenser with liquid cooling, or is that actually doing the rectification charging power? That's what
I think it's just a dispenser. That's just because they have the cabinets are going to be located remotely.
So they stuff the cabinets somewhere else, and then they just dispense the power. So, yeah, I mean, I got to go visit. My dad, you got to go visit. I mean, it just seems like a lot of press because he put 500 kilowatts on there, which a lot of these distributed systems are 680 kilowatts now and more. And so I'm not against it. I love new charging. I would go and film this happily and I'd be thrilled about it. What I don't like is the headlines of, and I guess I haven't researched it, which is why I'm just a bit skeptical as to what's so next level about this. The power management side, great. Maybe there's some secret sauce in there. That's cool. But a lot of companies have their own secret sauce on how to get power. The distribution software management, that's also pretty cool. I'm just failing to understand what's so cool about this.
The company's not responsible for what headlines come out there. You know, like it's getting so much attention now. Well, number one, because Google Ventures invested in it. So a lot of people are looking, Google's chargers. That's number one. And I asked them about that. They just, you know, have investment in it. But I think the fact that it's a solution for these inner city tight space garages, Kyle, that currently there was none. You know, I just for years, it's been so difficult to go into New York City because, you just can't charge. And people that live in New York City, and like I said, I have so many building managers ask me that. And Brandon saying there's plenty of systems that do load. Of course there are. Yeah. And there's more and more every day. New companies are coming out with load management. I was just at the QMerits annual summit and there was like a dozen companies that are offering load management stuff. So it might not be anything that is so amazing, but it might just be another player that's going to take a serious look at getting systems that will custom work in really tight spaces. And that to me, that in itself, if it works, is newsworthy.
Yeah, totally. Right. I'm not against more charging. Like I'm saying, this is great. It just, I just guess I got the impression and a lot of emails like, you, Kyle, you got to go figure out what they're doing here. It's so crazy. And I'm just like, yeah, they packaged it really well. They found a really great parking garage. They're providing a needed service of charging. And if it's a new charge point operator with their own design on cable management, that's awesome. And it sounds like that's kind of what it is, which is awesome.
Right. He said in the interview, the only thing they're having to buy in, which they haven't got the skills to develop themselves, is the cables. He said, because that's the only thing that you can't just go and create yourself without a lot of money and time and buildings full of engineers. They're having to go to the market, and he's not satisfied with everything that's out there at the moment. But I think what was interesting was he's used to doing either the venture capital pitch thing because I couldn't make the interview. I was due to make the interview with him and Dom and Tom. That is on our channel, but my 5-year-old threw up on me, so then I had to tend to other things. Tom was asking like, oh, cool. So how are these interconnected, and what's the load balancing, and he was like, and the responses to that was, imagine a world in which the cars could be their batteries on wheels, and you can have bi-directional power where the cars help the grid. And Tom's like, yeah, I know that. So I think he didn't know what didn't know that it was us doing it. And so he's used to probably kind of, I don't know, the New York Times calling up or the funding from Google being like, why should we invest in you? And it was the elevator pitch there. So yeah, let's get there in person. Kyle, Tom, let's get there. Like you, Kyle, like you did with the EA Center in San Francisco.
Yeah. Right.
Where was that? Which was like you said to the guy, hey, can you open the secret doors and show me around the back? And he's like, yeah, cool. Come and look at the power modules. And like, that's the videos that we want to watch. And the, you know, thousands of people that watch this podcast, that's what we want to see.
I got a lot of that when I did the interview, so I'm going to edit a lot of that out, you know. Brandon in the comments here said the guy's a buzzword man, and Moshe's a bit of a salesman. He's an interesting guy, and you know, he's trying to make it you know, he's trying to, I would imagine, get more investment at this point, you know, and he's got big goals, and he does see his system being much more than charging EVs down the road.
Well, you know, we're going to film the video. Next time I'm in New York, I wanted to do it when I was in New York earlier this week, but we didn't have time. But I'm going to film it. We're going to do it. And we're going to cut through all that BS because I have zero interest. And I don't want to even talk to him. I want to talk to his engineers. So hopefully we can do that. I hate talking to CEOs of companies. There's nothing more I hate than talking to CEOs of companies, actually. It drives me insane. I like to talk to the people who actually make the stuff. So unless that's the CEO, we'll talk to the engineers there.
Right. All right. Yeah. Well, if you go take Brandon with you, because he, you know, he's got lots of questions too in the comments, and he's, you know, and it's true. 500 kilowatts is a big claim too, and it's hard to test against that right now because there's nothing you can charge really at 500 kilowatts. So, and originally I believe they were going to, it's supposed to be 360 kilowatts. Like if you go on Google Earth and you go to that site, you know, there's a banner about an upcoming charger, you know, charging center being put there, and the number is 360 kilowatts on that, like before it opened, and somehow that was upgraded to 500 kilowatts. So there's room for skepticism, and yeah, we should definitely take a deeper look just to see like the power scavenging from the buildings. Exactly, how does that work? You know.
Because we also need to stop talking about adding miles in minutes. Can car makers stop it? Can charge? Can other, you know, a charging company stop talking about it? It's a pointless metric. It's an entirely pointless metric, depending on what vehicle you're plugging in, the efficiency of the vehicle, and a bunch of other things. And I've seen it a couple of times this week. And also, what was the Chinese EV launched yesterday? Xiaomi. I mentioned it in the intro. They wouldn't give the kilowatt DC peak charge rate. They didn't show a charge curve on the screen or anything like that. They were talking about miles and minutes, and I'm like, oh, can we just not start this, please? If you want to do 10 to 80 as a time, that's fine. We'll all live with 10 to 80 and minutes, but otherwise, can we just talk kilowatts,
but
please?
But Martin, in New York City, you might actually get 200 miles of range in 5 minutes because you're just inching.
Exactly. It might be true.
It might be do that on level two specific miles.
Yeah, exactly.
But one thing I will say to put a bow on this, I think part of our concerns or Kyle's concerns is that the splash that this made when it hit the market, it's kind of like, it reminds me when a movie's coming out and you hear about it for a year and then you see it and you're like, it was okay. As opposed to, you know, a movie you never heard of and you show up and you're like, wow, this was fantastic. I think it's expectations. I think that, you know, this is being billed as like something different and something amazing. And it really isn't, you know, but that doesn't mean it's not a good addition to the EV charging landscape. No, you know, and I've said this before, for me, it's a huge step forward that parking garages in New York City now, and if it all works as it's supposed to work, and it seemed like it was working when I was there, they have a solution now where, okay, we want to install chargers in this garage, you know, we can't really add additional power. Oh, call this company. You know, they'll light up your garage. They'll fit everything. They'll package it all in, and you won't even have to do a service upgrade. If that's the case, it has moved the needle, because we just haven't been able to do that. We haven't had equipment that fits, that's custom designed for this. And, you know, we haven't really had anybody, Kyle, talking about putting DC fast chargers on poles in cities, you know, where you know, it's needed. Level two is great and has a use, but there's an enormous dwell time for level two that not all people have. And, you know, in these really busy areas where cars are parked for an hour or two,
Manhattan,
it'd be fantastic to have, you know, a whole street lined up with 200 kilowatt DC fast chargers. If it's doable, then, you know, more power to them. So there's still a lot to learn about them. And I admit, I didn't learn a whole lot. You know, I kept getting steered in the wrong directions. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to edit things. We didn't really talk about the nitty gritty. I told them I want to follow up and come down and do a deep dive into your technology. I didn't do that. Maybe you'll do that, beat me to it. I won't have to do it, but, which is fine by me. you know, I just wanted to get down there. I only had a little time between meetings. I was at the Rivian R2 thing yesterday. I finally got to see the R2 and the auto show. So I had a little time to scoot over there, talk to him for a few minutes. And he had a whole bunch of other people lined up. He had people from DC come up too, from the government, to talk to him about it. So, you know,
well, that's not a surprise. So,
yeah. There's a lot of interest in this, and I'm sure it won't take long before we flush out, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a great exercise in branding.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, right. And let's see, you know, but you can't show that graphic that you just put up there, Martin. Go back to that.
What was that? It was a pop-up, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was a pop-up. Yeah. So that was a pop-up from the State of Charge newsletter.
What?
What?
Which is a Hearst Enterprise company, which I've been rolled in sort of a legal battle with for the last 2 years.
Someone else is using State of Charge?
Yeah, yeah. And we finally settled on having a mutual use. They're allowed to use it for certain purposes, and I'm allowed to use State of Charge for certain purposes. But to make a long story short, the Hearst Media, which is this huge company that owns a whole bunch of like Car and Driver, Road and Track. I don't know exactly which brands, but they own a lot. They started this thing called the State of Charge newsletter about 8 months after I started the State of Charge YouTube channel.
Oh,
but I didn't trademark the name when I started it. They did. So then it became we trademarked it. Yeah, but I was using it for 8 months before you were.
Right.
So, you know, we $25,000 in legal fees later, we've decided to let each other coexist. They can do newsletter and email notification. I can do video and, you know, car reviews or whatever. So, but we don't show State of Charge newsletter on Batteries Included podcast.
Not without a sponsor.
That won't happen.
So let's move on and talk about something else. So it wasn't a huge week this week for news as far as like new vehicles go. The New York Auto Show was this week, and it's surprisingly quiet on like the electric front. But Genesis, however, chose this time to announce a new performance sub-brand called Magma. And showing off a GV60 that gets their spicy treatment. From what I understand, it's lower and wider than the regular GV60. Has a lot of the hardware that's in the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, but it's not meant to be as hardcore as other performance sub-brands like AMG or Hyundai Zen, for that matter. It's also very orange. I don't know, Martin. Do you have a picture of that?
Yeah, let me get that up on screen. Yeah, because it's pretty, interesting thing for Genesis to do. Which I must admit, you know, Hyundai have N, and Kia have their GT cars, and then Genesis were like, "Well, we want to have a go as well." And you're like, "Is that really what Genesis is all about?" I don't know enough about Genesis. It seems like that they don't need to go down the hole. We've made it wider, lower. We've added aero and a diffuser, but they have, and this is a production ready. This isn't a concept. This is going to reflect production.
Right. They do call it a concept, but it's basically ready to go. It looks there's software things that needed to button down first or something.
Yeah.
But.
And the Neo Lum concept, they called it, but it's production ready. So, right. Like, wow. It's crazy. Look at that.
I don't know. So who do you think this will attract? Dave, are you in the market for a spicy GV60? Your wife had a GV60, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did have a GV60, and we had the spicy one, and it was more than what you needed. I look at Genesis as more of a luxury brand than a sporty brand.
Right.
That's not to say that they don't produce vehicles that move. I think it's a good looking car. But it just seems like
you think that's good looking.
No, I'm just saying it seems like a bit of a rolling oxymoron. Like I don't see the classy GV60 in white with the Napa leather seats we had. That was a nice looking car. It made sense to me. This just seems odd. I don't know. The car itself, I'm saying, I think is a good looking.
Right.
Car.
I like those wheels.
Oh, Matt, we disagree on that, but that's fine.
I don't dislike the GV60 look, but what did they do to it?
Well, this looks like it ended up on its third owner and was passed down to the teenage son of the third owner.
The modifications. Yeah. Yeah. Like seeing a 7 series.
Bigger wheel. I mean, bigger.
I don't know. It's wing on the back. A bit confusing to me. I imagine after the auto show, they'll have it at Genesis House. in the meatpacking district.
I think that's where it is.
Is that where it is now?
I think it is. Yeah, they unveiled it at their Genesis house rather than an actual auto show.
Yeah. Beautiful facility.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. If they have their own facility, go and do an automaker day.
Yeah. So Genesis also showed off a large SUV concept. Martin mentioned it briefly there a second ago, called the Neolun, which is thought to presage the new three-row SUV, sort of like the Genesis version of the Kia EV9, but with very Genesis styling. We don't need to talk about it a whole lot, but I was hoping, Martin, you might throw up a picture of it, because I thought it looked quite striking and relatively close to production. And they're also saying that what may have carriage doors in production, which is interesting. I mean, we always see carriage doors in concept cars at auto shows and stuff, but very few in actual production.
The i3 did it, let's not pretend it's the first time it's being done. But they said they've worked on the stiffness and rigidity, and they can do it. So,
right.
BMW also told me we will never make another car with carriage doors after they made the i3.
It's like Falcon Wing doors. We're never doing it again.
Very adamant about that.
Right. Simon's Matthews asked, do you mean suicide doors, Dominic? Yes, I mean suicide doors, but carriage doors just sound so much better. Do you have another? Is there another pick of this down the page
I'll try and find the one where the
doors
are open.
Can we just talk about how lame of an auto show it must be where there's no big unveils?
There's nothing. It's like Kia Prologue, K4. Right?
No, we've already driven Prologue.
Prologue.
Yeah.
No, but what do you mean Prologue? We've already driven it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for
it's recycled.
It's been at every auto show.
Oh, it has?
Yeah.
And Gravity?
Gravity's been at LA auto show.
And that's why Polestar 4, I think, was making its U.S. debut here. But, I mean, it's how we've already seen it, right?
No, it was at Polestar Day.
Right. Yeah, we've already seen it, but it's making its, I don't know, they're saying maybe it's a 3.
It was in the U.S. No, 3, 4 were both at Polestar Day in L.A. like 6 months ago or something.
Okay, right. So, yeah, so even then, I don't even know there's the interior of the Neolun. I don't think we'll be seeing that exactly. It does look pretty comfy, though. Actually, you know, often we see like these concept cars with the seats turned around like that, and the interiors that look like totally space-age, but actually I can see those look like production seats.
They said that that this is not a concept, a far out kind of design philosophy or exercise, that this was relatively production ready, and that it was they talked about they're moving away from blown air heating and going to infrared heating under the floors, like the BMW armrest, I think, and other cars do it as well. But they talked about a bunch of stuff that is new, but was all production ready. And so, look, these kind of captain seats are not unusual in the backs of luxury vehicles. We see them in the back of some of the Chinese stuff. The Li Mega looks like this. The new Volvo EM90 looks like this in the back. So just the front seat swiveling around like a camper van. But that's all very doable if they want to.
Do you have some more pictures there of the inside at all? Yeah, I guess they only have like the four seat version of this, because not a three row, at least in this concept form. But
yeah. There's the dash one and stuff. But yeah, I mean, they said that this is kind of it's ready to roll, and it's their version of the EV9. So, I mean, okay, it looks concept-y to me. But
I don't know about that front view there. That screen's perched up on the dash. I'm not sure that works in production, but I guess we'll see. We can move on, though. I guess let's just wrap this up and talk really quickly. So if it's been a good news week, if you're looking for an inexpensive electric SUV, the Fisker Ocean in sport trim has had its price tag slashed to $24,999. The bad news is, aside from the company seemingly days away from complete collapse, is that there aren't any actually in the country. So Fisker had this terrible week last week, and this week it jumped out of that frying pan and into the fire. Monday, it announced that a deal with a legacy automaker, widely thought to be Nissan, has ended. Then it was delisted from the New York Stock Exchange. Then a report came out saying it had lost track of millions of dollars in customer deposits and was generally a disorganized mess. And then it slashed its prices, which basically kills the resale value of its vehicles already in the hands of owners. So its share prices also continued to collapse this week. And the company now has a market cap of $11.35 million at yesterday's close. So basically, I think between the five of us here, we could probably scrape up enough money to buy it. So Kyle, this seems like a pretty much a cooked goose. Is there a price low enough that would encourage you to buy a Fisker Ocean?
And yeah.
I only ask you because you're the proud owner of a Coda or maybe two.
Yeah, well, I actually like the way this looks. Okay. I've driven the Fisker Ocean. I didn't love the way it drove, and I certainly did not like the software, but I drove an early pre-production one. And it was always a sign that the Fisker PR team was like, oh, we'll get you a car. We'll get one. But we just are waiting for this one thing. Ah, you know. And so I've had the opportunity. A lot of our viewers own Fisker Oceans. I've had the opportunity to swap cars with them, borrow theirs for some time. And maybe now is a good time to do it while they're in the news and hot. And it could be interesting to see what this car actually is, because I think we're probably getting, you know, owners saying this car is amazing, I can't believe it's failing, and then maybe investors or the general public saying, ah, this car is a piece of crap. I'm sure the answer lies somewhere in the middle. I don't have that much personal experience with it. What I will say is, when and if the company fails, which I'm not a company analyst, but if that were to happen, I really hope there's a third party, some enthusiast group that has access to keep these things running and on the roads, because a lot of people paid a lot of money for these and they have a big battery with big range. Right. They're not all terrible. Yeah. It looks great. It's got cool California mode. Like, I'm not against the car.
It's pretty also, quick too.
Yeah, but it's very front wheel drivey and like not
too
well. And, you know, we know all the guys at Magna that worked on this car, and I just give them so much crap for that front wheel driveness on here. I'm like, how could you let that happen to a performance SUV? And they're like, yeah, but design targets and costs and all these things. And I'm like, but this is stupid. So anyway, they have apparently had a software update to make it very much rear biased and some other things. Ultimately, I think, if they get cheap enough, we'll have to buy one, as long as it makes, you know, as long as people are interested in watching and learning about it. What is Fisker ownership like after company failure, if that is to happen? I think would make a cool, you know, 6 month story, 1 year story or more, something like that. I mean, we own the VinFast VF8. This is the clear competitor. So it'd be cool to pitch them against each other.
Oh no.
Yeah. I know there's not a lot in the country, but there are two in New York City, which I saw yesterday. Right, there's a Fisker showroom right around the block from Rivian's place. And the whole place seemed cleaned out. Like, there wasn't no brochures or anything. No one was in there, but there was two vehicles sitting in there. So that there's at least two here if you want to buy one, Kyle.
I think the human side of it was driven home to me this week, because there's no doubt Fisker's, you know, on its way, and selling the cars at a $24,000 discount is not a good sign. No. But as I mentioned at the start, so I've put my podcast, which has been going on for 5 years, back on YouTube, and for various reasons. And of course, that allows comments. As everyone knows, the YouTube comments are a fun place to be. And so yesterday's show that I did, because not with audio podcast, it's quite difficult to get feedback. People email me, they find me on social media, but if I choose not to open the app that day, that's fine, and I can avoid that. Whereas I do want to check the comments, and a couple of people were very, very defensive of Fisker. You know, the company is gonna pull through and they've got this amazing, and it was, you know, like Henrik had written, it was a sales pitch. And it reminded me, these people have probably got their own money tied up in it. They probably bought the vehicle. They might have invested in the stock, which is worthless. And this is, and I sort of sat there last night thinking, yeah, I've done this podcast saying, well, they, you know, they're going bust and you can get a discount and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, there's very real humans at the end of this paying their bills who are going to be left with the vehicle. And some in my comments, they were saying, yeah, but it's Magna technology. Magna will support it. They've got no obligation.
Right.
Magna have no obligation.
There's
to any
no
Fisker.
Way Magna will support it. That's not their job. Their job is to produce components for automakers, and they're fulfilling their contractual agreements with them. It's up to the automakers to support the cars, is my understanding. Is how right.
Absolutely. Oh, and then in the evening, I saw, I think, is it Sean at Fiskerati? And that website, which exists as obviously an enthusiast, he closed it down last night. So with a heavy heart. We're shutting
really?
It down. Like,
really? Yeah. And really? Your body's closed.
Wow. And you're like, if that was the top tier enthusiast community, and he put a blog out last night to say, that's it, we're done.
Isn't this the time to cover Fisker closer than ever?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. For those guys, for the owners, yeah, they thought, need all that support.
This is heartbreaking for the individuals, the humans involved that have invested years of anticipation into this. And there'll be a blame game down the road of, was it mismanaged and where did... And also this story this week, as Dom mentioned a moment ago, of people got cars and never paid for them.
Like, oh,
they lost,
right.
They lost the checks. Like, I couldn't... And I thought, this can't be real. And people got the car delivered and wrote the check, and then I think even the car that Edmunds bought, or maybe it's Consumer Reports, they never cashed the check. Yeah. It's like, how has this? There'll be a blame game down the road. For right. now, it's a human well, story, as Kyle says. In 6 months' time, can you own an EV when the company that built it is bust? And that's really interesting.
So I see this as like an opportunity to, like Magna, it has no obligation to fix or do anything for these customers. But I see there's an opportunity there for maybe Magna to spin off a new company.
I wouldn't grab it up. And, I wouldn't get involved.
I don't think they have any. It's such a few, you know, Magna is a huge company dealing with right. $1 million-$1 billion deal. I don't even know. But right. this is like such a blip. I'm sure I can. I haven't talked to the Magna folk. I should probably ask them what the heck is going on over there. I'm sure it's hectic. I'm sure Magna is having a rough go at it because right. they put so much into this Fisker deal. They right. gave them factory space, engineering time, all of these things. And I'm not sure if that was all paid up front by Fisker or if that's paid by per car that they make. I don't know what the deal is, but all I know is that Magna, I think, overextended on the Fisker deal and really screwed themselves on this one.
Right. I would be surprised if Magna didn't take it on the chin also, Kyle. I bet everybody that worked with the company, they have, you know, debts probably from all ends. So, yeah, you know, you make a long-term play, you know, with when you're paired with a company like that, and Magna was banking on really making money in the long run with Fisker, not upfront like this. I would be shocked to find out that Magna also didn't take a huge hit from this.
But yeah, well, at least they will. I mean, if they stop production, if they go out of business, that is, you know, 10 plus years of a relationship with an automaker that is just, done.
Yeah. After making how many cars?
Right. No, basically nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the bank that still does have the IP for this, they developed this platform, right? So they have this platform they could sell to.
But they have a bunch of platforms. They got 30 different platforms they could sell.
EV platforms?
Oh, yeah. They got a bunch of them. Yeah.
Okay.
A bunch of different things. Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, because
I'm not sure this is the platform I would recommend anyone to build their car on anyway. It's very similar to I drove the Arc Fox. It's an Arc Fox chassis underneath.
Okay.
And so that's like a Chinese kind of mid-tier luxury sedan. And right. then it was tried to be shaped into an electric SUV.
Right.
That was supposed to be sporty, which are very different design targets.
Yeah. But it's called Arc Fox. So. It's marketing. Anyway, so yeah, but I do feel bad for. We had a viewer earlier in the comments that mentioned his sister is now the proud owner of an orphaned $50,000 car. So and that's a hit basically, you know, because the resale value is probably not going to be great at all, and if anything happens to it, service is a challenge. But yeah, we should probably leave it at that today and. Let y'all get going with your days. So if you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. That helps us out a lot. And click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications for you to catch all these midweek interviews we've been doing this week and hopefully next week. So yeah, thank you all very much for joining us again. And we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.